Black Type Thoroughbreds is a new thoroughbred racing partnership that gives you the chance to get in the game. Not many of us have the money to buy our own professional sports franchise, but you can have a somewhat similar experience in the world of thoroughbred racing with a partnership like Black Type. Black Type's deep connections in the industry mean you're going to get top-level access to the best horsemen and horses. It's a great way to get involved. People are always asking me what they can do to learn more about ownership. Being involved in a partnership like Black Type that has a low markup and great people involved like Jake Ballas is the best way, I can tell you, to get involved as a thoroughbred owner. For more information, you can reach out to Jake directly and check out the information on his website. That web address is blacktypetb.com. You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show 101. I am your host, Peter Thomas Fornatale, back with you, not in the Brooklyn bunker, but in a place that I record in from time to time, not the Brooklyn Podcasting Studio either. I'm actually at my dad's old office in Port Washington on Long Island. We made the trip out here Christmas Day, spending a couple days. I'm still playing hurt. You can probably hear it in my voice. Hopefully it's not too scratchy and annoying, but decided to play hurt because we got big things happening with this newfangled Santa Anita opening day. We talked about the decision to cancel the traditional opening day, which is usually Boxing Day, and they have moved opening day to Saturday. From what I hear, as miserable as the weather was out there yesterday, anyone who was complaining about this decision beforehand has now realized that it is probably for the best. So wanted to bring in a special guest for this 101st show to go over opening day at Santa Anita. We were going to have JK too. You can't make this stuff up, folks. He's stuck in line at the DMV. So we considered trying to pipe him in from the DMV. Too much weird background noise. We'll bring JK back, but we have a replacement that people are going to be very happy with. With this being the 101st episode of this show, that means that the, if you count the existence of the old show, it would be translate to about episode 501. And we're going to bring in the man who hosted the number one episode on the old show. You know him. You've seen him on NBC. We call him sometimes TV's Matt Bernier. I changed that last time he was on to TVG's Matt Bernier. I don't know what to call him now, but he's our old friend, Matt Bernier. Matt, how are you?
I would say the international man of mystery at this point. We could just go with that. I'll steal that from Austin Powers. I'm good, man. How are you? Everything is... It's crazy to think. You had sent me a text a week or so ago, or 2 weeks ago. We were chatting about some other things, and you said, could you have imagined that when we started this thing, you'd be 500 into it, now 501. It's crazy that you, not only is it at this point, but the fact that you guys just had the seamless transition in 101 episodes for you guys. Well done. Round of applause.
Thank you very much. It was a really, really fun year, and the fan support is why, and the industry support is why, and that's why I always, at the end of every show, make sure to go out of my way to thank those people. But, man, I could be thanking you every episode, too, because this was really a joint brainstorm of you and me when we both started pretty much on the same day at the place with the letters back in, I guess it was 2014. And we both had this idea, and it's been fun. And I have to say, the fans miss hearing your voice every week, Matt. Any plans to get yourself back on any airwaves anytime soon?
Well, I said to you right before we came on, I feel like I need to shake the cobwebs out a little bit. I've been on the sideline for a little while now, but I would say, let's just say there's negotiations ongoing, and I'll leave it at that. There's a number of different things in play, but some with people that I've been with in the past, and some with people that I haven't been with. So I would imagine you'll probably see me sooner than later, but nothing is firmed up just yet. But all is well. No issues. Everything's good. But I'm glad to get back into the saddle and start talking about some racing. And you're right. I mean, this thing started when you and I, way back when we were I don't know, you know, at the old place, and talking about how there really weren't any kind of podcasts. There were the radio programs that we're all familiar with and we all know about, whether it's Steve Bick or anyone else, but We kind of said, why don't we just kind of give this thing a shot? And I'm also happy to see, and I know a lot of people have kind of become like a running joke, like, oh, well, everybody has a podcast now. Well, it wasn't really like that 4 or 5 years ago. You know, it was, there were only a handful of them, and it just feels like this has been something that's blossomed. I'm not saying, you know, you or I are taking credit for the amount of people that do that in podcasts now, but, it's been wild to see, and I'm happy that iteration, it looks slightly different, but here we are 501 episodes later. So well done.
Thank you, my man. When the history of podcasts comes up, I do like to shout out Derek Simon. That was the first horse racing podcast I heard. Started out on You Bet, ended up at Twin Spires. I see Derek from time to time on social media. Seems like he's doing well, working out more than I am, that's for sure. And it's but I do like to give him credit because I feel like in that realm he was the pioneer, and it was a baton we were happy to grab and run with, and it's fun to keep doing so today. How are your holidays, you're in the midst of them, obviously, but you get anything good for Christmas? Any good degenerate Christmas gifts to share?
Well, this year was a little bit different just because I think all of us, as far as our two families are concerned, I got married in October, so everybody is looking at the old credit cards and the old pockets on fire right now. Everybody did well. We got some golf things, and anybody that knows me, I'm big into golf. If I'm not looking at the races and we're not out and about doing something, I'm usually on the golf course at a driving range. So that's always kind of where my eye goes, and that's my little escape from anything, whether it's work, whether it's life, whether it's anything. You know, if I can get out there and hit the balls around a little bit, that's always positive. But everybody seems to be in good form. Everybody had a good time. We went out to my parents' house and my wife's parents. We saw everybody. We do a kind of a joint family Christmas Eve dinner, and then we headed back out to the eastern part of Massachusetts for Christmas Day yesterday, and now we what typically would be opening day at Santa Anita, we just have to wait it a couple days out, and then next week will be New Year's. So before you know it, 2020 is right here.
We will be getting to those races at Santa Anita, the stakes-laden card, in a minute. I just had one little holiday gift follow-up folks saw the other night, or maybe listened to the musical interlude that I posted on Christmas Eve and heard about this plan that Perrin and I concocted to leave the vertical tasting of Lagavulin whiskey for Santa. Well, the man in the red suit one-upped us because, yes, we left him the 8, the 16, and the 17, and then under the tree in a package for me on Christmas morning, I found the Lagavulin 11, the special Nick Offerman edition, delicious addition to the collection. So now we've got 4 different versions. Have to thank Santa Claus for that one. Perrin very amused by that. And I know folks were interested in how the vertical tasting went. Apparently, according to the note he left me, he enjoyed it immensely. All right, with Christmas in the rear view, with New Year's on the horizon, let's look at these races on Saturday. The first stakes race is the 5th, the Grade 2 San Antonio. Matt Bernier, how did you see this one?
You know, it's an interesting spot because you have a couple of comeback horses. You also have some what seem like up-and-comers. And the most up-and-coming of them all, I would imagine, is the number 6 midcourt for John Sheriffs. You know, I thought the Native Diver was a relatively easy lead, but I loved the way that the horse moved. His ears were pricked for the first 3/4 of a mile. Then Victor gave him a couple of taps, and he kicked away really impressively, finished full of run. And he's the kind of horse that, you know, we take a look at the older division, the way that it shaped up in 2019, where, let's just call a spade a spade, it was a hot mess. And I feel like it's nice when you perhaps get a late bloomer, and who knows, maybe this horse, this is a 4-year-old gelding by Midnight Loop, soon to be 5 years old when we make the turn. You know, maybe this is a horse that can kind of stamp himself as a player. I think one of the horses, though, that I don't want to say it was easy to forget because he'd just been gone for so long, and it's the way that I'm going to go. Admittedly, I've never been a huge Gift Fox fan, but I really think his 2019, albeit an abbreviated campaign, I thought it was really solid. His Stephen Foster, that led to a bit of an issue. He had a number of little hiccups where he couldn't ultimately get back to the races when the company would have wanted him to. The Breeders' Cup obviously was the main goal. His Foster, I really don't think, was nearly as bad as it looks. He was very wide throughout. It wasn't a great effort by any stretch. It also seemed like a bit of a peculiar spot for him to be wheeling back in about 3 weeks from when he had run in the Gold Cup at the end of May. I'm basically just drawing a line through it. He's fired fresh off extremely long layoffs in the past. This is not a brilliant opinion by any stretch, but if you could get the 9-to-5 on Giftbox compared to the 2-to-1 on midcourt, just because I've seen Giftbox do it at Santa Anita on the biggest stages, and granted, maybe this is nothing more than a means to an end, but I'll go with Giftbox.
We see it very, very similarly. Just to underline a couple of key points you made about Giftbox from a form study point of view, I absolutely agree that that race was not necessarily one to hold against him. And the two key points you made about the Foster to me, people sometimes forget that when a horse comes back, and I know, you know, 21 days in the modern era, let's face it, that's back quick. That's the kind of thing when a lot of people are going through form lines, they might miss that as a potential excuse. And then, as ever, when you have a horse who has a subpar race but then is gone for a while, you can assume that was the start of a cascade of potential little issues. I don't think you need to key off that race. I think you can go back to his good races, especially when you delve into his work tab. Now, I haven't seen a proper workout report, but even just looking at the times and distances, this is a horse who looks ready to come back to me. I see it as a match between Giftbox and midcourt. Similarly to you, Matt, I can't do too much to pick between them. Maybe if you force me to make a top pick, since you committed to Giftbox, I'd commit to midcourt. But really, I'm very happy to take those two against the field in my picks and just let the chips fall where they may. Let's move on to race number 6. It's the Grade 1 American Oaks, another race where I wanted to be creative, and I ended up circling back to the horse that I believe is going to be the favorite. Lady Prance-a-Lot just looks best on form and figures. Proved herself at Keeneland in October. I like the fact that Bravo is here to ride. I'm hoping he can keep her close enough and she'll end up passing them all. Just an improving type in the right spot. If JK were here, I know he'd pick Vibrance just because he's been a Vibrance fan for so long. So I'll throw in that pick by proxy for him. But Matt Bernier, what do you think of this year's Grade 1 American Oaks?
You know, the thing I like most about Lady Prance-a-Lot is, you know, of the girls in this spot, she seems like the one that has the best turn of foot. She seems like she just has that kick. And obviously, it doesn't necessarily mean that what it is at a mile and a 16th is going to translate out to 10 furlongs. But having said that, the other fillies in this race, I don't know that they have that sort of late kick. So if Lady Prance-a-Lot can stay within shouting distance, which I think she will, because frankly, I don't think there's a ton of speed in this race. I think she's going to be in a pretty good position. You brought up Vibrance. I know she's paired up by her tops of 86. She's got a relatively competitive time form U.S. rating. I just don't think she really is taking a step forward here as a three-year-old. The only filly that I wanted to give a chance outside of Lady Prance-a-Lot is the horse that I'll pick in here. And it's a tepid one because I'm afraid of the distance. Giza Goddess, I'm drawing a line through the matriarch. Want to talk about way too much, way too soon. Against really solid horses. There are no Got Stormies. There are no Daddy the Legends of Juliet Foxtrots that are going to be running in this race here on Saturday. The mile and a quarter, I have no idea if that's going to work for her. To me, she does feel like a flat miler, but in a race that, there aren't any true burners. Maybe if you want to say the maiden winner down on the inside is going to go, I still don't know that I really am that concerned about her. Maybe by default, Giza Goddess can kind of inherit the lead at some point in this race. And it'll be curious for me anyway to see how that turf course plays, because if you remember Breeders' Cup weekend, it was intensely speed friendly. You needed to be relatively close. Anyone trying to come from out of the clouds, they just didn't really have much of a chance. I don't know how that'll play now, especially with the weather that's gone through Southern California. Maybe that levels things out a bit, but Giza Goddess, again, she's the only one that I found mildly intriguing outside of Lady Prance-a-Lot.
And the distance, while a question mark, maybe in the right hands to eke out the extra distance. The Sheriff's Barn, known for getting horses to finish. I can definitely see that one, and Giza Goddess will be on some of my tickets as well.
The other thing real quick, Pete, about distance, and we talk about Santa Anita, and I know, you know, for a number of reasons, the hill is more likely than not going to be defunct here before you know it. The mile and a quarter starting down the hill, I think it plays a little bit shorter, so maybe that works for a horse like a Giza Goddess. I always go back to the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint Filly and Mare Turf a number of years ago when Day at the Spot won for Chad, where for the most part in New York, she was a miler, mile and a 16th. She gets it done there at a mile and a quarter starting down the hill. I think it plays a little bit shorter than 10 furlongs, so maybe that helps her cause.
also an excellent point. Let's move on to the Grade 1 La Brea, one of the traditional opening day Santa Anita affairs. Return to the races of Bella Fina in here. Matt, let's keep it with you. What do you think is going to happen in here?
Yeah, you know, I mean, if we're just kind of looking at the form and saying the most recent run, if Bella Fina runs the Philly and Mare Sprint back, she wins. I'm not going to really argue too much about that. There's no Covfefes in this race. But it's a tough call because she gets back to Santa Anita. Clearly, that's where she does her best running. She gets back to 7/8 of a mile, which I think is what she's wanted all along. And she makes all the sense in the world. I don't think you're going to get 9/5. I think she's going to be a fraction of that price. She always takes money. If she runs back to that most recent run, she's going to win. But at a short price, I don't know that I entirely trust her. She's thrown some clunkers in the past, and do I really need her at 4/5 or even money? No, I don't. A horse that, it's not necessarily that I love her, but a horse that kind of fits a profile that I've always liked in these 3-year-old 7/8 races, opening day, Santa Anita, horses that have a little bit of speed going longer on the turn back. That's just a general rule of thumb in handicapping, but I'm intrigued by the 8 Motion Emotion. She goes out for Richard Baltus. On paper, she's not fast enough to run with the likes of Bella Fina or even a Bell's the One or some of these other fillies that seem like they're up and comers, but I liked that she won that Zia Park Oaks most recently. I know it was before horse field, and she just basically took over rounding the far turn. But I've never thought of her as a two-turn kind of horse, and they continued to campaign her at two turns, with the exception of that Beverly Lewis 3 starts back. That, to me, felt like nothing more than a starting off point for a new connections out on the West Coast. You turn her back, she's going to have the bottom, but more importantly, she has enough speed, I think, to stay within shouting distance of the front. I think she can be relatively close. To me, the best race of her life has come going shorter. I know she earned that 90 going two turns down at Oaklawn back in February, but the maiden score, I loved everything about that back in January at Oaklawn going 6 furlongs. That, to me, is kind of the race. I think she's capable of running something like that. If she takes any kind of step forward, I think she's fascinating. She'll be a big number. I don't know why she reminds me of Constellation, the filly that won the La Brea a number of years ago, because if I remember correctly, Constellation didn't go a route of ground until very late in her career before they retired her, but just kind of coming from perhaps a little bit of a more minor league circuit and then showing up in Southern California on the biggest day and getting all the money. I want to give her a shot at 15/1, Motion to Motion.
You make a creative case, and I love the 15/1 price tag because I'm sort of with you about recognizing the talent of Bella Fina and identifying her as the most likely winner, but just not fully trusting her. I went in a slightly less creative direction and decided that I would try the improving First Star, who I thought maybe made the move last time into the fastest part of that Raven run. I thought all in all, Bell's the One had maybe the racing flow a little bit more in her favor, though they both ran really well. I do want them both on some tickets. I am not going to be a hero with Bella Fina. She will be included defensively as a saver. But again, I just don't fully trust her ability to show up with her A game. But based on your say-so, Matt, I think including some Motion to Motion at that very big, juicy number might make some sense. I think you make a lot of good cases, including about the turn back. And that's one we had a recent question about that we haven't gotten to. And I'll pose it to you, Matt. And how do you use turn backs in your handicapping? What do they signify to you?
To me, I love a horse that's turning back, whether it's to a one turn mile, to 7/8 of a mile, 6.5, maybe even still plays depending on where you are. But I love a horse that's turning back coming from route races when they show route speed. If they can be relatively close or outright on the lead, but have shown the ability to be able to sit off of a target and still be effective, they turn back to that 7/8, that one turn mile. Those are demanding configurations because it's the ultimate test of speed and stamina, because there's only one turn. So in theory, the horses, the most professional ones, you're only going to get one lead change out of them because they're only going to be on their left going around the far turn. And it's just the ultimate sort of, you need to prove that you can hang on. I don't want to call it an elongated sprint for a one turn mile. It certainly is that for 7/8 of a mile, but I like the horses that have that bottom where they're not going to be tiring at the end, where maybe some of these other horses that are coming out of 6 furlong races or 7/8 of a mile against lesser, now you got to do it against the big girls and the big boys. That can be a really demanding situation, and that's why I tend to gravitate toward, if I can find them, I want to gravitate those horses that have that speed, going longer, turning back in distance, have also shown the ability to pass horses. That, to me, it's an invaluable angle, and it's an angle that can perhaps lead to horses that can pop at big prices that on paper might not really make all the most sense.
It's very well described. I'll just piggyback a couple of thoughts onto it. It gets to that idea of bottom that you were saying, Matt. It's almost like you get the benefit sometimes of the equivalent of a bullet 5 furlong work just because of the extra fitness a horse is going to get from that, especially when they're coming back in the same form cycle. I've heard experienced handicappers even refer to turnbacks on horses who are coming off of long layoffs. And to me, that doesn't make sense. I feel like the benefit of that move is that extra fitness that is going to occur when the horse is coming back within, 3 to 5 weeks of when the turn back occurred. And I think you also hit on the other key point. We're always looking in this game, especially now with so much money being bet by computers and computer players, when you can find factors that are going to sort of contradict what you see in the bare form, the things that a computer is looking at, I feel like that's where you can still find some pretty good wagering opportunities. Now, at this point in time, somebody may say, hey, well, that's probably baked into the computer too. Fair enough, but I'm just making the more general point that when you can find a reason that the bare paper isn't the most accurate reflection of the horse's ability, that's a time that I'm still happy to fire in 2019, and one of the reasons I, too, am a big fan of looking at turnbacks. All right, let's move on to race number 8. It's the Grade 3 Frankel going a mile and an eighth on the turf. Blinkers off and Baltus on for number 2. Excellent Sunset. That got my attention. I was thinking a good trip can be expected here from behind what appears to be an abundant early speed scenario. This horse is underachieved this year, but this could be the time to shine, and I think will be a decent price. I hope will be a decent price anyway. What did you think of the Grade 3 Frankel, Matt?
Yeah, excellent Sunset. It is an interesting move now going out with Baltus. A little bit of an equipment change getting back to the blinkers off. The thing that you alluded to was what scared me off. Just those 8 second-place finishes from 15 lifetime starts with only 2 victories. I can see her getting involved late. Maybe this barn change is going to get her over the hump. I was just a little bit concerned with her at a shorter price. You're right about the pace. At least that's the way that I looked at it. You see Mirth, you kind of know what her game is. And look, she ran a credible race in the Filly and Mare turf, given that she went out there, if you believe the Timeform US pace ratings, one of the internal splits when she was open by 6 was a 155. So she's setting land speed records out there. And the run 2 starts back in the Rodeo Drive. Look, she beat a bit of an inferior group. Beau Recall is probably a little bit far for her at a mile and a quarter. I understand Mirth. She makes plenty of sense. I just think Harmless is going to keep her company just to her inside. I think Ms. Painter just to the outside is going to be relatively close. And there's a filly in here that I've chased her a little bit, and I'm guilty of doing this from time to time. There'll be another horse coming up that I'm guilty of chasing. The number 5, Curlin's Journey, to me, just I need to give her another chance in here, perhaps at a nice number. She's 6-1 on the morning line. I love the run 3 starts back at a flat mile, the N1X race. There was no pace in that race. She came with a giant, giant finish. Got her final quarter in 22.65. That's racehorse time. They go to the Catherine Crosby. She comes with a nice finish. Thought it was a good enough effort. And then they tried to stretch her out in the red carpet. And it just was not the cleanest of trips. Rounding the far turn, she's starting to warm up. She's in a little bit tight. Forced the weight. Then we get to about the 8th pole. She really, I don't want to say checks, but kind of loses her action a little bit because of the sort of tight circumstances, and still finished quite well. To me, the slight turn back to this mile and an eighth is going to hit her right between the eyes. The pace, I agree with you. I hope that ends up materializing the way that you and I think it's going to. And if she is 6-1, I've got to give her a look. I'm really taken by Curlin's Journey. She might not be a grade 1 caliber at any point in her life, but I think she can be a useful filly and a useful mare and make some money for the connections. I'll give her a chance here.
I like that read, looking at the finishing speed of these different runners. Curlin's Journey certainly among the best. I'll have some 5s on my tickets as well. An Excellent Sunset's one to me where I'll definitely be using in picks that are coming blind into this race. But this is one that I could see spinning if she ends up going off at 5-2 or something because of the aforementioned underachievement in the form of low odds second places. Not something I love, but something I'd be more than willing to accept at 3-1 or higher. But I could end up changing things around or playing some doubles to cover a few more possibilities, depending on what the odds board says as we head into this one. Now let's move on to the Grade 1 Malibu. It's a short field, but I think it's a real test and an interesting race nonetheless. Matt, we'll get your take on it first.
Yeah, I agree with you. Only five horses. You got three Bafferts and a Chad. I mean, so is 2019, 2020. It is what it is, right? Yeah. And you happen to have the other one being Omaha Beach. Omaha Beach, I think he's the most likely winner of the race. Thought his dirt mile in the Breeders' Cup was really, really strong given the start. The fact that he was trying to rally from off of it on a day where, look, it's Santa Anita, it's difficult to make up ground. I just think he makes all the sense in the world. I wouldn't talk anyone off, but I don't know that he has such an edge that it makes him a prohibitive favorite in a spot like this. Complexity, I'll tell you what, if you want to just see a visually impressive effort, go back and watch the N2X, his first start since the Woody Stevens up at Aqueduct back on November 20th. He went out there and absolutely cruised up three wide. Jose never got out of first gear with the horse. Gave him a couple taps down the lane. I think that's probably just to get some fitness out of him. And he went off and won for fun. Mr. Dougie Fresh, the runner-up, he came back and won, and finished second next out with a 91 buyer. So that 101, I think it's legitimate. Having said all that, I'm going to go with one of the Bafferts. And it's not the typical Baffert that's got the big speed. I still believe in Roadster. I think there's something there. The Native Diver was not a good effort, but as we spoke about when we spoke about the San Antonio and the winner midcourt, I thought it was a relatively easy lead. Roadster was always sort of three or four lengths off of it. When the real running started, he never really picked it up, but it was kind of a boat race. And then you hear some things throughout some of the reporting in the racing forum that perhaps the blood work didn't come back great for Roadster coming out of that race. He missed a little bit of time. They get him back on the beam, get some works into him. And I love that his best races have come at Santa Anita, and I think the 7/8 of a mile, I think he was a little bit unlucky in that Damascus, given that was his first start in, what, a good 5 months. I feel like he probably overachieved a little bit, despite the fact that Baffert usually has him ready to go and they don't need a prep. I think, again, with a little bit of a turn back, he'll be probably three or four off of it, I'd imagine, with some other speed in here. I think he might get, I don't want to say lost in the shuffle, but I think he's very clearly the third choice in here, and maybe he goes off at 7-2.
I could see that happening. I think people are a little, they think they know Roadster, and you make a good point about how there are reasons why he could turn it back around. For me, the key to betting these picks is I'm just going to live or die with Omaha Beach. Obviously, he ran well enough as it was in that dirt mile. I wish he'd been allowed to use a little bit more speed early. I don't think there's any way he's getting a bad trip in here. Complexity is one to be feared, but I think Omaha Beach has enough to potentially blow up that rival around the turn. And if he's as good as I think he is, he'll win. If not, there are compelling cases. Matt just made one for Roadster. And, you know, if you're right, I'll be wrong here. I just feel like there might be a little bit of meat on the bone in the picks with Omaha Beach with these plausible alternatives. I just want to see him put on a show. We'll see what happens in the Malibu. Would you be completely against Omaha Beach, or in your picks, would you try to get cute and use a little bit of Roadster, a little bit of Omaha Beach?
Yeah, I'm not totally against him at all. I really think he's the most likely winner. I think you can make the case, despite what we've seen from Maximum Security, I think you can make the argument that Omaha Beach is the most naturally talented three-year-old of this crop. I'm going to be curious to see ultimately where he's positioned, because that Santa Anita sprint two back, know that was his first start in a long, long while, but it's not as though they were out there going crazy for Santa Anita. I know Chancelot, he's a one-way type of speed. He goes out there and just tries to go breakneck. But Omaha Beach, I'm going to be curious, because outside of him, you've got much better down on the inside. And even with Complexity, he has a little bit of early foot that, you know, I'm always a little bit leery about the East Coast speed going west, thinking that it's not necessarily going to translate the same way that it does in New York. But I am going to be fascinated to see what Mike Smith wants to do. Do you just perch up three wide out in the clear and say, I can take you whenever I want you? Or are you a little bit more aggressive? I personally would like to see that. I'd like to see him get into the race early on and say, the bottom is there. I'm not worried about the 7/8 of a mile. Let's get into the race so we know that we've got a fair shake at this thing. But I'll be very interested to see how that whole thing plays out. And I also, look, we've spoken about four of the five runners. Manny Wah is not a bum. I think Manny Wah is a nice horse. I just think this is a little bit of a tough spot for him.
I think that's fair. A horse, though, that you could certainly consider putting in underneath in a bet like the try here. There are tries on this race. And it could be the kind of thing where if the ones at the top of the market end up tangling, you could see, if in my scenario, if I'm right, maybe you could see an Omaha Beach messing with Complexity enough that Complexity doesn't have to run in the number. I could see, I mean, look, that might not be the way that it works out, but I could see a world in which that is the way it works out, and Manny Wah as the longest shot or second longest shot on the board, that could spice up a try for vertical players if you were willing to take a shot against one of the ones at the top of the market. So we'll see
PTF, how it plays. As someone backing Omaha Beach, what kind of trip would you want?
It's a good question. I mean, I think Much Better probably goes. I want to see him in the top flight, outside clear, and I like the fact that Smith will have options. If Smith decides the right move is to just go, I'm not going to question that, but I see it more. I see him more being outside and close to Much Better in Complexity and then just trying to take him on the turn and blow the race apart. That's how I see it in my head. But that's one of these where I love the fact that Smith drawn outside, he's got these options, and I trust him to make the right call. I think if he had to do the dirt mile again, he would have used more of that early speed and been closer. That's how he's run the best, and I think that's what we're going to see here again.
No, and that, I agree totally. I feel like Much Better, you have no choice but to go. I could see Complexity being about a half length off, and then I could see about a half length more, three wide in the clear, being Omaha Beach, and then tucked in just behind is Roadster. And if you're someone like me, if you want to give Roadster a shot, you need to hope that those three go hammer and tong, just throwing it down early on, and then perhaps maybe you get the opportunity to loop up, turning for home. But I agree with you. I think you and I kind of see the race play out the same way.
All right, it's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Again, aesthetically, it would be nice to have more runners, but I like the fact that it is going to be a real test for Omaha Beach. We know we're not going to get a lot more from him with his stallion career awaiting. I'm hoping he puts on a show. I do think, I like what you said about Maximum Security and this one maybe being the more naturally talented of the bunch. All that said, I still think Omaha Beach wins this by 10, and 3-year-old's going to probably go to Maximum Security based on the entire body of work, and I'm okay with that. But, when we're talking about naturally talented, that's not the same thing as resume. Would you agree? I mean, is there any way Maximum Security is not winning 3-year-old at this point?
It seems unlikely, given the way that he won that Cigar Mile. He did it very, very emphatically, turned away, I think, a really nice horse and spun to run, did it pretty easily. You combine that with the Florida Derby, you combine it with the Haskell, you combine it with whether, and here's one of those difficult things with voting too, with anything that takes the sort of just the subjective into play. There are still people that will look at him and say he's the Derby winner. And if that's the case, then, it's going to be difficult to change their opinion, regardless of what the record books are going to say. So I agree with you. I think Omaha Beach, to me, would have needed to win the Breeders' Cup, whether it was the Dirt Mile, the Sprint, the Classic, whatever race. He ended up running in the Dirt Mile, obviously, and then probably come back and run in this race and win this as well to win 3-year-old, given that he had a lot sort of – he was in an uphill battle no matter what, given the amount of time that he missed.
Yeah, and the Maximum Security resume is just so strong now. Even forget the Derby, he's still got the same three grade ones Omaha Beach would have, and when you stack up his three grade ones, they're pretty darn impressive by comparison. And then you throw in the collateral form to spun around. There's no case to be made, even if he wins by 10, like I said. But he's a horse I like and a horse I'm very interested to follow for the rest of his career on the racetrack and then on to stud as well. We have one more stakes race to talk about. It goes as race number 10 on Saturday, the Grade 2 Mathis Brothers Mile. Matt, what did you come up with in here?
Well, and I hope anybody that listens to this doesn't take this comment the wrong way. I think this is an unspectacular group. I think they're all really nice horses, but I don't think there are any superstars. There's no one in here that I'm terrified of, and that includes Mo Forza, who, look, he's just rock solid. His last four races have all been spectacular. He nearly broke his maiden in an allowance race, comes back, breaks the maiden, then rips off two graded stakes wins, including the Hollywood Derby most recently. I still look at him and say, if he wins, I won't be surprised, but I just don't think there's any kind of giant edge that he has on this field. This is a race where I go through and I look at the pace, and I think Never Easy is going to be relatively close. Mo Forza, Neptune Storm probably won't be far off. Kingley has one way to go. Loafer's Boy, if that horse stays in, the stretch out maiden winner most recently, Dirk the Turf, and then Baba Jackie in the outside. I think they're going to go. I'm guilty of chasing horses in the past. I'm going to chase the number two Originaire one more time. The Hollywood Derby, look, maybe he was never going to threaten for a piece, but I didn't think it was the cleanest run when he got into mid stretch. I thought he was just boxed in a little bit, and whatever the case may be, maybe he wasn't going to run, maybe he was. I'm going to draw a line through that. Twilight Derby was on Breeders' Cup weekend. Hey, that running style coming from 10 out of it was never going to work on that turf course against those kind of horses. And the run three starts back, I think he was length the best by finishing third, being beaten by over two lengths because he was miserably wide throughout. Before that, you're left with a pretty consistent horse. Maybe he's a little bit of a nibbler, but he's going to be at least 15-1, probably even north of that. The rider I'm not super familiar with, Umberto Rispoli. I read something. He had ridden in Hong Kong for a while. He was a leading rider in Italy. Ron Anderson is his agent, who also represents Joel Rosario. And apparently Ron Anderson spoke to Frankie Dettori, and Dettori said that American Racing is going to fit Rispoli like a glove. So I'm going to look to Frankie.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Originaire for me at a big price in a race where, you know, it wouldn't blow me away if any one of these horses won. I think it's a pretty open group. I don't think there are any superstars. They're nice runners, and I've had a thing for Originaire for a while, so I'll chase him again.
I love it, and I took a long look at the horse too, ultimately deciding, maybe just too far back, but one I certainly would not mind on having spread tickets. I ended up going with a very similar idea, a closer who's going to be a very big price. I ended up with Proud Pedro in this spot, probably one more likely to run third and fourth, but looking at this form, I just didn't think it was as bad as the price is going to make it out to be. I felt like that was an early middle move last time. Two back, picked up pieces in a race that was coded blue on Timeform US. Maybe is just one to pass tiring speeds and get up into the number, but I'll have a little bit on top as well, just because I think the value will be so outsized on number 8, Proud Pedro. We see it very similarly. We just came up with different closers. If I made you settle on one, Matt, towards the top of the market, which one would you gravitate towards between the likes of Mo Forza, Neptune Storm, Kingly, and Bob and Jackie?
It would probably be Mo Forza, just because I feel like he has the most established form and he just continues to rip off good race after good race. The one that would probably be most intriguing to me would be Bob and Jackie, but very lightly raced. It's a little bit of a stretch out in distance, second off the bench, brutal outside draw. And I think that could be really kind of a key for this horse, where the last thing you want to do is get hung four or five wide going into that first turn with a horse with some speed. I don't think they want to be coming from mid-pack. So I think kind of your hand is forced a little bit. I think you got to go use a little bit early on. And again, first time going out to a distance like this, he's at a flat mile here. It's still one of those things from that far outside draw. I don't know that I want to have to use too much early, be hung wide, and hope that things end up, you know, working out where the pace is on the more moderate side, and I don't have to deal with anybody trying to rally from off of it. He would be a little bit of the more intriguing one, but to me, probably if I had to pick one of the favorites, I'd probably go with Mo Forza, just because he just seems to be in great form right now.
Yeah, I agree with all that. The price really being the only thing that puts me off Mo Forza. I don't know that he's going to really justify as short of a price as he's going to be in a race that I just see, as you do, something chaotic potentially happening. But I would certainly have Mo Forza on my picks. And Bob and Jackie, the post does make me nervous, though. I'll never forget his race when he beat Omaha Beach, and I sent out that the unfortunate tweet that I referenced when I did my write-up on Omaha Beach for attheraces.com. When I questioned Omaha Beach's heart after that race and said something completely obnoxious, since completely proven wrong, about that it's a good thing the men at Omaha Beach had more metal than the equine Omaha Beach, or we'd all be speaking German.
I tell you what, I said the exact same things, because we were out there for, I believe it was Super Saturday last September, so it would have been 2018, and it was a second lifetime start, and I watching him, and I had him singled in, I believe it was the early pick five. And because I thought his debut was okay, and now second time out for Mandela, probably needed one, yada, yada, yada. And I thought it was just an absolute abomination that he lost that race. And I said, the horse is no good. And then he comes back in that next race at Del Mar and does almost the exact same thing. And I said, he just, and I remember saying it to someone, I don't know who it was. I go, the horse can't run. He's just going to be one of those over bet kind of horses that has competitive figs. And he ends up going 1 for 10. He's got a lot of second and third place finishes. And then they move him over to the dirt and he does something similar. He loses the race to Nolo Contesto. I go, I don't know what to do with him. And then all of a sudden he just exploded. And I said, well, I look like a dummy. And you know what? Not the first time, not going to be the last time either.
Yeah, that's okay sometimes. And it does help to remember the hands a horse is in the patient hands of Richard Mandela or Shug McGahee, those kind of transformations that we saw. You know, I think back to a horse we talked about in the early days of the other podcast, Honor Code, a horse that showed some goofiness early, but in those patient hands, those horses sometimes as they move on, they move up lengths and they get so much tougher. And this is just a question of styles. It's not to praise one or denigrate another. I don't think you're going to see that with horses coming through the Chad Brown operation or the Pletcher operation or the Baffert operation. They're arriving, they'll still get better, but they're arriving much closer, I think, to fully formed than horses from some of those more patient barns. It's something that you can sometimes use to explain transformations in horses when you do that fun exercise of going back through the PPs and trying to tell the story of each individual horse. I did not prep you for looking at the last race, but I know there are people here I've been talking about horizontals, so I'm going to at least give my quick thoughts on the Nightcap. They're not very interesting, I warn you in advance, but I did just want to say my general thought here would be to have potentially some tickets using a modified all, or at least an all at the C level, where if all my strongest opinions, if all my A horses get there, I wouldn't mind having some iterations to everything in this last race. The ones I'm looking to press, unfortunately, can't get too creative. The top of the market looked like the right ones. Totally Tiger with the best numbers here. I think well drawn on the outside. Papa Tony will get pressed a little bit for me too, for having the best early speed in a group where I could see the pace totally holding together. Wish I could be more creative, but my top line would be 8 and 11 in the last at Santa Anita. And as so often is the case on these big days where you then have the last race, which one is not like the others, the cheaper last race, include as many as you can, at least as C's. It's never fun to be right about all the stakes and then get knocked out in a race like this. You don't have to comment on this race specifically, Matt, but generally speaking, what is your approach when you have the situation with all stakes races and then a cheaper race at the end? Do you stay out of picks that include that last race? Do you try to be more inclusive the way I was describing? How do you do it?
I'll typically try to just avoid it, frankly, depending on what the situation is. I mean, if there are unique instances where maybe there's a carryover, maybe there's X, Y, or Z, and I have to go through with it, so be it. It is what it is. If I were going to play and just kind of doing a quick glance at this, I'd be curious to see how some of those horses that have one or two starts under their belts ran in those races, because typically, if I'm looking at, you know, and I'm probably putting these horses in the winner's circle, I'm looking at Beyond Preacher, if I'm looking at Papa Tony or Sierra Melody, or certainly a horse like Wicked Blue or Totally Tiger, I feel like I've seen them a fair amount. That doesn't mean that they can't win these races, but I kind of know what to expect. And if they win with one of those races, so be it. Conversely, the horses that have one or two starts under their belts, I think you can project a forward move. And this is the kind of race where I'm not afraid, even though the barn might not be the sort of typical one that gets the first timers ready, cranked up and good to go. I wouldn't be afraid of looking at a horse like Jungle Boy, the number 9, going out for Steve Miotti. I think Miotti does a great job. Again, he's not necessarily known for having him totally cranked first out of the box, but he does show positive ROIs for those type of moves. So this would be one of those instances too, where if I'm not thrilled with anyone else, give me the complete unknown. You want the real X factor. It's the horse that's never run in the afternoon. Give me a shot with him if I don't think that any of the other ones have blown me away or I have questions about their overall ability.
I like that idea, and I definitely like the idea of wanting to lean towards the horses who you'd say are unexposed. We don't know how good they are. There's so many reasons to improve, as opposed to the more exposed runners who've run enough times that you have a decent sense. I try to walk the line between the two. Sometimes I want to drill just way down into the tangible numbers when I don't trust them. But again, for me, I just don't want, if I'm right about something you know, most, there's a lot of chalk in what I gave out today, obviously. But if we're right about a double-digit winner, a $20 winner in the Mathis Brothers, I don't want to lose if there's a way I can have, even if it's just for the minimum increment in some of these picks, to be covered to everybody. If I could write a ticket where that magic can happen, I'm willing to do it.
The other piece that I would just add to that real quick, here I am talking about taking the first timer when, you know, because the way that you laid it out was perfect. He's unexposed, or she's unexposed. We haven't seen that they can or can't do it. I'm saying that in a race like this, where we're looking at, you know, if you're using the buyer scale, we're looking at horses in the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. Now, if you have a hot maiden race, which we will start to see at Santa Anita, and we'll see at Gulfstream and all these other tracks that are getting ready to go as we ramp up into the new year, if you get a race where it's like this and you've got a number of horses that in their first or second start have earned 82s or 84s, unless the first comes from a guy named Baffert or Chad or someone else like that, maybe it's not the best angle to take. But in a race like this where it feels like, you know what, maybe one of these, maybe a first-time starter can pop up and earn a 55 in their first start, maybe that's when you want to look for sort of the unknown.
I think that makes perfect sense as well. Matt Bernier, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. We will have you back on soon, and we look forward to hearing what comes next for you in the coming year.
Thanks for having me, man. Always happy to help out my boy PTF.
Much appreciated. JK thanks you from the line at the DMV. I think he moved about four spots out of the 26 he needed during the near hour that we were on here. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Another big thank you to Matt Bernier for helping out today in a pinch and coming through as per usual. I want to thank our sponsors, including Black Type Thoroughbreds, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, 10 Strike Racing, Stats Race Lens, and all the rest. Most of all, as I mentioned up top, thank you to all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do and for getting us many more downloads than we ever could have expected in our first year on our own. We really, really appreciate it. And this will be the last show, I realize, almost definitely, of 2019. So that's pretty cool in and of itself. Thank you once again from the bottom of my heart, and to everybody out there, I hope your holidays continue to be fantastic. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. Hey everybody, just wanted to give a word for our latest partner, Stats Race Lens. This is a product that is definitely worth checking out. You can even get discounts if you use the promo code STATSITM. We're talking about customizable PPs with comprehensive research abilities, video replays, advanced search and notifications, access to Stats True Odds, handicapping angles, and back testing. That's what Scott Coles used to help him win the NHC this year, and he's talked about on this show. It's mobile and tablet friendly. Stats Race Lens, bringing clarity to handicapping. And make sure you use the promo code STATSITM, STATSITM.